I may actually have done something like that. You know,
you're talking about losing your edge, and I was just going to say that edge. Long time gone, Kevin. We are now in 5G age. We are LTE advanced and 5G. And that's a great way to start episode 150.
I've messed up the numbering. We're going to have to go back and check. Okay, let's go with 150, but I've done something bad in the last several episodes, and I've got out of sync. Apologies all. Okay,
oh, my goodness. Numbering is not your strong point. just like it isn't for the Wi-Fi consortium, where they just like numbering Wi-Fi and they're not sticking to the numbers. But anyway, I have an interesting little tale. Yesterday, I was without electricity because we have three-phase power. So after load shedding came back, one of the phases went down, which was all our plug circuits. At the front of the house, most importantly, the one that my laptop plugs into. So that died quickly. And then, yeah, after, you know, you go through this weird thing in your neighborhood WhatsApp group where you seem to be the only person who's having the problem.
Yes, we have that too, yeah.
Because only probably half of the properties in, like, this estate have three-phase power. Mm. And then of those people, many of them were not at home, so can't like directly report. And then the phases obviously run different things. So it's like their main house supply might be running on a phase that was totally fine. So I was screaming into the void like a madman at one stage, communicating with Eskom, and Eskom was like having none of it. Not like we have a dude that escalated it and escalated it again. And I have friends who are Eskom technicians. Nothing was happening. And then just after supper, and Eskom Bucky pulls up at my house.
Ooh.
Two technicians, and they were like, "We were sent here."
As usual, the kind of broken communication. But okay, now you've got the guys. And what happened?
Yeah, I explained the situation, and they took a drive up in the area, and they came back, and the power was on, and they were like, "Oh, no, it was a blown fuse. You know, it happens.
Okay.
All right. Power comes on, it's too much draw, the fuse blows." So, yes, I am fully restored to my capabilities, and it's awesome to be having this chat with you.
Okay, I have my own version of that story, and it's an unusual story in that in this story, I end up taking tech advice from other people, which is unusual for me because I'm the person who's dispensing the tech advice. Well, after having fiddled around with trying to keep my internet connection up during load shedding and failed mostly, I tried to run the fiber box and the router off a power bank, same power banks you use for your phone. We discussed this on the show once or twice before. And I mean, for various reasons, that didn't work out as planned. And then I went to someone's house to watch the rugby test last Saturday, a relative, and they had purchased an inexpensive single box battery by a company called Gizu, G-I-Z-Z-U, which is nearly 10,000 milliamp hour battery block, which will feed both your fiber box and your Wi-Fi router and keep your entire internet up. So we're busy watching the rugby. I'm waiting for the load shedding to cut in the first half hour of the match. And indeed, you know, about 40 minutes into the match, the power goes off. We switch to his laptop, and it's great. We're watching the test match on the laptop because the internet has stayed up.
Yes, sir.
So I can't believe I'm so far behind the curve on this stuff. But now we've ordered our own Gizu box. That's G-I-Z-Z-U. The great thing is he did all the legwork, all the research, and arrived at this box, which will power both the fiber box and the Wi-Fi router for 873 rand on Takealot. So that's one solution. There are many other solutions like that, but the Gizu solution is what I'm going with. So that's on order. We're waiting.
One of those solar batteries, you know, that you get like the multiple lights with and everything.
Right. Yeah.
And I realized that those light thingies are 12 volt outs. So if you do a male to male cable and you run it from the light thingy into the router, Bob's your uncle.
Dang.
So that's how
we've
been doing it until yesterday came along, and that was already under, because we were hit with that dread. I call it the dreaded because it really messes with my productivity time. So it's the 10 p.m. Load shedding, and then the 6 a.m. load shedding. So the battery that you wasted on your laptop and on the router doesn't have chance to recharge because that's my solution. So I just plugged it into the solar panel eventually yesterday. I had to. And yeah, it kept running all day kind of thing. But then I moved my Wi-Fi router or my 5G router away from the optimal location. So then my already abysmal upload speeds had tanked quite a bit because, as you know by now, if you listen to this podcast, the tower that I get my signal from gets load shed the session before we do. And the battery.
Yes, so you lose extra time. Yeah, yeah.
And then they actually stole the batteries. The tower was down. So I was getting from like a tower a kilometer away. And then my internet was proper horrible. Then I just never reconnected to the normal tower when they got the tower back up and running. This again, Rain 5G, to their credit, they have upped their customer service game. They are responding on social media. They are reaching out. They phoned me. An actual Rain person phoned me.
Okay, well, that's a big step up, because the biggest problem with Rain has been that as fast as the service has grown, their customer service has not grown at the same rate. And so you could never actually reach a human being for any help of any kind. And now you've gotten past that. Yeah. But it does remind me of two other stories in the news this week, one of which I'll mention because we're not actually going to cover it. And that is that apparently government is now working on a 2-year plan to get the internet to everybody in the next 2 years. They better solve their power problems first, I reckon. We'll see. It's a good ambition to have. And it's like, even now, it's like late in the day to come with these ideas. But you really need to keep your electricity up first if you plan to get internet to everybody.
Yeah, but I mean, there is a plan, your homie Derrida. I actually went to bat for Derrida this week.
Oh, for a change.
He's getting heat from the Black Business Council.
Everywhere.
Like from
everywhere. Yeah.
Even his own people.
Yeah.
By his own people, I mean the fairest.
Be a little careful.
I'm very sorry for the generalization. We are all Africans.
a little late, a little weak. Yeah, okay. So the Derrida was taking flak because there's all this load shedding now. And who's turned on him? The Black Business Council, the South African Federation of Trade Unions, the National Union of Mine Workers called on Derrida to resign. And here's his response, which I thought was really good. I want to hear how you batted for him, but the man bats for himself. He says, given the current circumstances, it is more important to have continuity of management than to fall back into the trap that Eskom has been in over the past 10 years, where we had 11 different executives. And that's precisely the point. Everything will come right if we can just have some continuity in management, have a plan that gets followed through and so on. So, I mean, he has the support of, I think, big business in South Africa and all the energy analysts as well. So that's quite an important lobby, but I hope it's enough. Yeah. Okay.
I think he just needs, all he needs is the support of his direct controlling minister, which is not Demantashe. Let the team down.
So who is it? Is it Public Works or?
Yeah, public owned entities. So
the state enterprises. So that's Gordon. Yeah.
Then of the president, which I think he has the full trust of. I know it's always dodgy when like your bosses put out communication to like endorse you, because then you know you're close to the edge, and none of that has happened. I watch a lot of football.
You are so cynical, dude. You are so cynical. Cynical like the reluctant journalist you truly are at heart.
Like when the bosses are putting out good stuff in the press about you, then you know.
Okay. Anyway. Well, it's a good thing I've never been patted on the back at work. It probably means my job is secure.
Who are calling for his head mostly don't understand how electricity generation
or how to manage a company the size of Eskom either. Yeah.
So like, my biggest pet peeve right now is the people who are trying to correct everyone and saying that load shedding is a term that was invented by Eskom when they couldn't deliver energy and all this. And it's like, guys, foundational load shedding is a universal, like a worldwide
industry standard term. Yeah.
It's the only way you can deal with or mitigate against cascading failures. I will link an excellent Wikipedia page. Like, it, whoever wrote that page is doing the Lord's work.
Okay.
On cascading failure, just explaining exactly what happens when one little system, one metropole gets overloaded and like it just bleeds throughout the system.
So two things have been going on. One is Chris Yelland. He's like a very vocal, you might not agree with his views, but
no,
what he said recently in the media is that there are big businesses and, I mean, big industrial-sized companies and municipalities who are being called on to have load shedding with the rest of the country, and then they're just refusing to do it. And the danger of that is if we overload the grid, we will black out the whole country, and it will take weeks to bring the power back up across the country. I'm assuming this probably dovetails with the stuff you've read.
Yeah.
But that's the one story. The other thing is going on is that, again, I'm going to read this straight out of the story. Key South African government ministers have reached a broad agreement to sell some of the state-owned utilities' coal-fired power plants. They're actually going to sell off some of the coal-powered stations. But, I mean, we haven't heard De Reiter's view on this, but the finance minister is saying to De Reiter, look, you sell off the stuff, you can take the money. I don't want the money. Just service your debt. And their debt is now over 400 billion rand. I don't know what that is in dollars. Oh, Eskom has over 400 billion rand in debt. And if we sold off all the assets, we could raise 450 billion rand. So I'm assuming they're not planning to sell everything. And I have reservations about how that's going to work out. But at least these things are on the table. We'll see.
It's really funny that in 2009, Barbara Hogan put out a statement where she was saying that they couldn't find 23 billion rand to fund the modular pebble bed reactor pilot project. And then got the loan from the IMF to build Medupi and then subsequently Kusile, which the cost of that, or at least the cost of Medupi alone, has now 10x'd.
The 23 billion
that they could have spent on homegrown technology and owned something that could have been a money spinner now with modular reactors coming back into the global energy frame.
So for those who don't know, the reason we are so bulk on pebble bed reactors is that South Africa owns most of the great intellectual property that's gone into developing pebble bed reactors. It's our own invention, more or less, you know, and these are small, manageable nuclear power stations that they don't have the kind of fallout that we associate with Chernobyl and that kind of thing. It's a much more controlled process. And we actually own the intellectual property for that. And we would like to know why we can't have more of that, please. You know?
Yeah.
You mentioned 5G earlier. You mentioned RAIN earlier. And I've been fascinated by how successful RAIN has been at providing 5G broadband. And then I saw the story come across, which is that Vodacom's 5G footprint is even bigger than it thought it was. Because when my broadband does its speed tests, which it gathers in crowdsourced data from all its users, they were picking up 5G tests all over the place, even places that are not even considered part of the Vodacom 5G coverage area. And my concern with that is that the MTN coverage map is less than what they show on the map. Okay, so on the MTN 5G coverage map, they've got Century City, they've got all these other places. MTN has got a new head office in Century City. I parked outside the head office and could not pick up the 5G. So I really don't know what's going on. How is it that Vodacom's area is bigger than they are allowing for in the map? And MTN's is much smaller than they're showing on the map, including no 5G outside their head office, for heaven's sake.
So here's a little thing. Remember when we had the big 5G thing, and I explained to you that 5G NR was a bad thing for the industry? So there I was at the launch of the Cisco Edge Center.
Right. I remember. You went to that.
Which is in the old PricewaterhouseCooper building, which is right opposite the road from Vodacom. And I was catching 5G speeds, like 5G coverage there, obviously. So I was doing like speed tests and like screenshotting.
On Vodacom, obviously.
Yeah, on Vodacom, on the LGV60. And then it just used to dip. It just dips from 5G to LTE. But the speeds don't change.
So you're getting 5G speeds on 4G network.
I was getting like 250, 300 megabits per second on like an LTE, and the phone is showing LTE. I can show you the screenshots. I'll actually put it up on my Instagram, and then you can go to there. I'll link in the description as well. So yeah, that's just kind of what they've done is they've reformed a lot of the LTE kind of antenna equipment with this new 5G NR stuff. And it's pretty much what I think AT&T was doing in the States, where they were just calling like LTE Advanced 5GE. I think they were calling
it. Okay, I remember that whole, there was controversy over that.
I'm very sorry, Vodacom, please don't sue me.
Okay.
These are all anecdotal tests.
Yeah, but I'm distressed about the lack of MTN coverage. I mean, I'm a faithful MTN subscriber. I get 5G absolutely nowhere except Bloberg, which is where they launched their 5G offering. As far as I can tell, that has not expanded at all, despite what their coverage map says. I can't get any.
Vodacom 5G in Strand, in some...
Getting it everywhere, yeah.
Like Brackenfell.
Yeah, I mean, according to these reports, you can get it in Claremont, the CBD in Seapoint, in Kirstenhof. Kirstenhof is like most of the way to my house, and I'm like out in the sticks.
I think you need to switch.
No, I'm never going to switch. But the point I'm leading up to is we are about to do, hang on a second. I have a bit of a cold, sorry. We're about to do a budget phone shootout, and there are now so many budget phones with 5G, I have to decide if 5G is appropriate for a budget phone shopper, and is it perhaps a problem if you don't get 5G in your budget phone? I'm interested in your opinion. So with budget phone, we're going with, you know, anything between $5,000 up to $8,000-$9,000, you know, so it covers lots of handsets, and there's at least 6 or 7 5G handsets in that mix there.
Yeah.
From Oppo, from Xiaomi, from Samsung.
Yeah,
you know, the whole lot. Everyone has the Nokia. Everyone has 5G phones at that price point. So I have to decide whether we recommend to budget consumers whether they should insist upon 5G in their next phone. Your view, sir?
I don't think that 5G should be a purchasing decision right now. Just as someone who has used 5G equipment, it's not the game changer it was sold as in its current form. And even like reports coming out of the US where they have the faster, the millimeter wave stuff, and it's not reliable. Like the practical application isn't there. We can get similar speeds and similar abilities using LTE. So I especially think on the lower end consumers, definitely don't make it a thing. And if that radio's firing all the time, it's gonna impact your battery life a little bit more. It's, for me, it's the same as like high refresh rate screens, where it's like it's nice to have.
Yeah, so it's a like, solution for which the problem doesn't yet exist.
Yeah. When the 5G emblem like kicks up and you're catching like in excess of 200 megabits per second download speeds, but your upload speeds are still like at 5 to 10 megabits per second. So. Like,
and I mean, and your YouTube plays just about the same, I would think, on 4G and 5G. I would think YouTube probably, and for most people, that's the most data intensive thing they do if they're not a professional, like, you know, yourself.
So like,
I think that is very, very sage and wise advice you're giving there.
Where 3G to LTE was a marked improvement
in
quality of like videos you could consume, that kind of streaming quality. Yes, but the LTE to 5G, I think it's diminishing returns, man.
I think these are very wise words. So I guess what you're saying is if you're buying a new phone today and you're likely going to keep it for 2 years, even within 2 years, you might not have really good application for your 5G if you're a budget phone shopper. I find myself inclined to agree with you, actually.
And importantly, we see now in the 2020 phones, even in the 2019, 2020, and 2021 devices, the actual radios in the phones have improved dramatically, like generational improvement. It went from outside to now on the SoC. like the energy, the efficiency improvements are big. And now we're running into, we're getting into the 4-nanometer process, which the next flagship Snapdragon 898 or 895, depending on which leaker you believe, that's should be launching next week at their conference. And that's being built on that. And it's getting the new architecture, which is the ARM V9, which is like a generational leap over, like, we haven't had an architecture shift in 10 years. So this is like cutting, bleeding edge stuff. So I'd wait, especially people like buying up phones. Here's my crazy theory. And Samsung, please don't sue me. No, you're listening, Justin. Samsung was pushing the foldables now so that they could get into position to drop the new chips next year. And they just like streamlined all their product lines so that
they can get... I have no idea what that means. You're going to have to break that down a little bit for me.
So all of the marketing of the high-end phones in 2021...
The foldables, the flip phone and the folding phone,
has been just a distraction from their failings on like a technical level.
Sorry, what have they failed to do on a technical level?
They have failed
anything good
to deliver efficient, high-power applications on Android, or at least the technology on their flagship devices. So they've gone to gimmicks. Like, look, it folds now.
Okay.
Like, it folds, and so the battery's a bit crap on the Flip 3, but it folds. So, like, you can forgive us for giving you a crap.
Okay, so you're saying they don't have a whole lot to shout about, but I mean, we're seeing that even with Apple, they don't have a whole lot to talk about in their new phone at the moment. It's like everyone's bracing for something big to come, but nobody knows what it's going to be.
And it's the V9, it's the V9 architecture. That's going to change things. It's Android, and I put it here, this is, what's it, Android and Qualcomm's last chance to gain a performance advantage. ARM V9 and the 4-nanometer process seem to weight the odds of getting a leg up over Apple very likely. The first new architecture to jump in a decade gives Android manufacturers at least 9 months of lead time over the next iPhone. So if they can get this stuff together,
Right, so they've got 9 months to at least draw level with what Apple has put out recently. They've got 9 months to get it right, or to surpass it, ideally.
Surpass it, and have that lead that Apple will then have to close down. Because this is going to be a generational change in kinds of power, efficiency.
You mean just these new chips?
Yeah.
The 898, yeah. Okay, so for those who are unfamiliar, Qualcomm was kind of, I guess we could call them one of the biggest mobile chip manufacturers. At one stage they were the biggest, not so much anymore. Qualcomm mobile chips, they were the colossus in the market, and their Snapdragon was always their flagship kind of grade product, and their last highest chip was called the 888, and you're saying, Lindsay, that they're now going to the 898, and that's an even smaller physical product than the last one.
Yes, and it's built on a new, so ARM, who designs all the instruction sets for these processors, in March of this year, they published their, or at least they released their Cortex-X2, Cortex Cryo X2 high performance thing, which now deals with their brand new architecture for these processors, which is ARM V9. And so the graphics, the GPU that goes with it is usually like a 6 series. We've had, I think we finished on 660 was mated to the Snapdragon 888. So the new Adreno is going to be the 730. So if they were willing to put like an extra like 100
on the score, on the number, then it means it's going to be significant.
We're gonna see. It's going to be similar to the way Apple kind of caught the PC market with its pants.
With its M1.
Which again, like the Surface Laptop 4s are coming to South Africa. The cheapest one there is like $30,000.
Surface, by the way, for those who don't know, is Microsoft's own laptop brand. It's called Surface. Yeah. Okay. And the Surface 4 will be its new laptop. Yeah.
Yes. And that's coming to South Africa shortly at the handsome price of like $30,000. I don't have the exact prices with me right now. But yeah, there's no compelling reason to pick those things up because they're still running Intel chips. They're not even running the new 12th generation Alder Lake chips.
Yeah, so, on the other hand, you know, Intel's taken a lot of flack, even from me over the last few years, for just being a dead end, kind of dead wood, overweight, uninnovative company. After, you know, controlling the PC market for years and years, they just ended up in a no man's land. But they're, I think with their new CEO, they are slowly climbing out of it. And I'm actually very impressed with some of their recent offerings. So one of their new graphics offerings is called Iris Xe, and I'm encouraging everybody to look for that in their next PC. It will be a graphics chip much better than the stuff that ordinarily just comes bunged onto your board. If you're not buying discrete graphics for gaming, I strongly recommend you try and get a PC with Iris Xe in it, made by Intel. And Intel is producing actual graphics chips to compete directly with NVIDIA, the market leader. And those are looking quite good too. And Intel's brought out this whole X range of stuff. What's it called? Evo. Evo. Yeah. Evo is Intel's brand for when they certify all the components of your laptop to be super power efficient and have interesting extra features and stuff. So Intel making all these moves that are slowly regaining some respect from me.
Yeah,
we'll see where it goes.
It's too little too late from my perspective.
It is too little too late. But they've got such deep pockets. And, you know, we are in danger of all the chip making ending up in one place. We've discussed this many times on the show in Taiwan. And, you know, if we end up with all those semiconductors in one country, which gets taken over by China, then the whole world gets held to ransom. It's important that other countries are developing chip making facilities, but they are hell of expensive, like, you know, billions of dollars thinking here. We'll see where it goes, but I'm starting to regain a little bit of respect for Intel.
Have you regained respect for DStv though? That's what I want to know.
No, I mean, without at the risk of getting sued here, I have been deeply suspicious of MultiChoice CEO Kelvin Mawela for a while, because he's been talking up the kind of gains they've made in DStv. Meanwhile, in my heart, I know that DStv has peaked and is rolling downhill fast. And unless they come up with an answer to the streamers, they're just going to keep hemorrhaging money. And then they lost so much money through the lack of sport over the last 2 years. I don't know how they can possibly be coming back from zero sport revenue, just almost zero sport revenue from the last 2 years. You know, that was their kind of cash cow. So no matter how much they talk up the position they're in, I think DStv and MultiChoice are still going to have a really, really tough few years, is my feeling.
So here's the thing, right? I know you're talking here, you put up the thing, DStv premium streaming goes from $8.29 to $6.99. So that's
the
streaming only.
Drops a bit.
That's online only.
Yeah.
So there exists a large number of people who don't have access to broadband.
The internet. Yes.
The way that we do.
You can see them in informal settlements. You can drive along and you just see dishes on everybody's house.
And that is a major growth area for them. It's like, I think Neil deGrasse Tyson once said this about God. It's like, if you are putting heaven out there somewhere where you can't see it yet, what happens when we discover and identify what's in the entire universe? Like, the concept of heaven will always be shrinking and shrinking and going further into a little corner until we find it. And then what happens to your belief system then? So DStv, it's like a growth market, but that growth market is always shrinking.
True. True, because what we've covered in past weeks is precisely how DStv is trying to get into the internet service providing market using its dishes, because it's identified that there are people who can't get any streaming services because of lack of internet.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll see where they go. So they've lost another 100,000 subscribers off not just its premium package, the DStv premium package, but also its compact and compact plus packages. And unfortunately, CEO Kelvo Mawela predicted that when rugby came back, all the DStv subscribers would come back. And unfortunately, that has not played out as he has expected. So even if he's getting ad revenue from the rugby, the truth is he's losing all the subscribers who are watching that rugby, and eventually that will also impact your ad revenue, because if fewer and fewer people are able to watch the rugby, you know, Castle Lager is going to look at this and go, wait a minute, you know.
Yeah.
So I think we'll see.
They've got those long-term deals sewn up. There's a lot of things in the background that is also going on where you're going to see some sports streams, like league-specific sports streams, go to various other players as well as newer technologies start flooding into the market. I feel sorry for what's going to happen to DStv's ad revenue, but there is also potential for them to grow exponentially if they can control the streams from whence they come and sell ads on top of that. And there's a lot of like third-party solutions right now coming into the country.
Yeah, they are busy trying to make deals with people. But, you know, their bread and butter, which is all those DStv people paying nearly R1,000 a month for the privilege, I don't know where that's going to go. Okay.
Yeah, I still think that's the same with like publishing, where you don't make your money off of the subscribers, you make your money off of the ads. And as long as they can keep that, I think there's a line that they'll reach where they have to drop their ad rates lower than what they'll start to lose money that way.
Yeah.
Run the business than it is than what they're getting from the ad rates. And I think they are way off that. It just shows the monopoly that they've had on that market.
Yeah, it's true.
MultiChoice was designed as the ocean that was going to keep the print business afloat.
Right. Okay, but they've spun it off effectively. So MultiChoice's results don't directly come back to Naspers or any of them because it's its own company now, allegedly.
Allegedly. Showmax,
Honor is a separate business to Huawei.
It's crazy stuff. Some great reporting from friend of the podcast, Hadley Simons. Huawei. I almost said Huawei like some sort of sap.
Yes, what does Hadley have to say?
Oh, Huawei is in some ever-increasing level of deep cuck where Joe Biden has just passed an order now that makes the FCC, like it just closes the last loophole. So the FCC were processing something like 3,000 requests or applications for like special use of US IP from Huawei since 2018.
Okay.
And now with this new order, they are not allowed to even view those applications. From ZTE and Huawei, which kind of just kills. Huawei's dead in the water right now.
Right. I mean, but you know, they're doing other good things. I am going to feature the Huawei Watch 3 in my next magazine. I'm going to do a big blowout on that because I was hell of a impressed with it. And, you know,
titanium one.
Yeah, the titanium one that looks like, stainless steel. Aluminium. Yeah.
R1,000, people. That's what Gavin is willing to tell you to spend.
We're not going to focus on that. We're going to focus on, you know, how you can build products without the US messing in your, and build great products without their IP.
This will affect their future ability to make their own chips too.
Yeah.
So many patents that they have to get to run their business, to develop new technologies that now they won't be able to even apply for.
But imagine China, if I was China, I would just go, we're taking Taiwan and all these reference designs we've got here, we're keeping those too. We're just going to use them as we want, whenever we want. And if you don't like it, you can send a ballistic missile over. We're going to just steal your IP and use it and go away.
They have a new friend. China has a new champion in Xiaomi that's making steady guesses. What they now third.
Yeah. So Xiaomi is third and right up there with Apple, really, kind of on Apple's doorstep.
Yeah.
So
they beat them last year for the same quarter.
Yeah, which was an unusual moment, yeah. But the big news, of course, is Vivo. Vivo has managed to separate itself out from, you know, the camp of others. When we look at these charts of who sold more phones than who, there's always a category called other, which is where LG always used to end up, and a whole lot of other brands used to end up, because they weren't a big enough market shareholder to have a line by themselves. They never made it into the top five. But Vivo is now sitting solidly at number 4. I don't know how solid it is. They claim it's solid, but we see that Oppo is also sitting in position number 5 with almost identical market share to Vivo. So, you know, And Vivo has now announced it's making a, it's reigniting its efforts in South Africa. They've been very quiet for the last year and a half, but they're coming back with new products now. They're busy launching the Y33S. I don't know much about it yet. I know it's got a 50 megapixel shooter. It's nice and thin. Yet another nondescript Android phone. Yeah. Exactly. Okay, no one's... I mean, except, you know, Samsung's made some folding phones. Nobody else has done anything of note, you know.
Yeah.
Frankly, LG's models for the that strange rollout scrolling phone was the most interesting thing I've seen, except that LG is no more, you know.
Yeah, it's a sad thing. And I find myself ever more being drawn into Apple's sweet embrace.
Yes, no, I can see that. I've decided to not mention anything, but I see you being embraced there. And I can understand why. It's because you've been excellent at surfing between all the worlds, but eventually it just becomes exhausting trying to bring two different platforms together all the time. You have to constantly find techniques and tricks and ways of doing it.
It's just
whereas you could just, you know, commit to that single delicious walled garden where everything is lovely.
It's just because Android is just disappointing me lately. All the Android manufacturers are not producing, although that Sony Xperia Pro I is a fantastic little thing that I coveted so badly. It's got the 1-inch sensor from the RX 100 series point-and-shoot cameras.
Mm.
And yeah, this thing is just excellent. It's a smartphone. It's their flagship phone for 2021. And it's a very, it caters towards people like me who like to use the best hardware we can to then manipulate it in using manual controls to then produce higher end.
Yes. Content. You want to catch the best quality you can at source. And Sony's really good at that because they understand multimedia production. You know, Sony hasn't been in South Africa for 5 years. In that time, we've seen probably a dozen phone brands wash up on South African shores.
Yeah.
I'm trying to work out why Sony has never come back to South Africa. But the truth is they only hold hanging on to a sliver of market share worldwide, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they have the pockets to go the distance. And that's
Do they though?
Yes, dude. They're
PlayStation
biggest
money.
Camera maker right now. Although they can't make enough PlayStations.
They only actually became profitable like a year or two ago. You know, they've been losing money hand over fist, even with all their PlayStation success for years.
The TVs are good, but everything's going good. But that's my story for this week. I'm not even going to promise any content on that opinion guy that's here. Something will appear there at some stage. I've got a lot of things to say about Fier de Klerk.
That'll be interesting.
Backlash against that. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on right now. Sharpshooters, Sharpshutters is where you catch me on the Twitters and most of social media. I don't fight with people anymore. I refuse to feed the trolls because
I'm
too busy.
I am working very hard. One of our biggest stories of the year is always the budget phone shootout, and we've got so far I think 8 different phones that we'll be covering in that. It'll be, you know, all around the 5,000 Rand to 8,000 Rand mark. This is the most important sector, I think, in South Africa. People who haven't just bought the cheapest phone available and they haven't bought the best phone available. They've bought a sensible phone in between. So we want to help those people as much as possible. So we're putting a lot of effort into our budget phone shootout going into the next issue of the magazine. In between that, what's going on? Not much. I'm busy implementing my load shedding solution to keep my internet up so we can go on working. And I will let you know how that goes next week.
Cool. Hopefully we won't have any load shedding till then. Cheers.
Oh, right. Cheers. Bye, man.